My name is Mike Manzuri, and I make skateboard videos for the most part. Aimless was a project that came about because Etnies was part of an art exhibition that was happening in Paris this summer. The exhibition was called Public Domain at the Getty Art Museum, and a few of us that have been involved with Etnies for the last many years, me, Yogi Proctor, and Gilles Delapont, were asked to represent Etnies in this art exhibition, and Aimless was my contribution to the exhibition. The exhibition was kind of a big deal, I guess, for a skate art thing. The gallery was brand new, just opened up, 5 stories of high-tech art gallery space that was brand, you know, like I said, just been refurbished, old building, so it was quite an opportunity to do something different. And they had a lot of different spaces we could use to check out in the gallery, and I sort of went back and forth between the two options. Of one option was a 360 degree film and a room that you could project on all 4 walls, and then the other option was a panoramic, and you can kind of tell from the second half of the film that where we kind of like shifted, because the 360 didn't work out for technical reasons. The gallery couldn't let us project that in there, so we opted for the panoramic space and basically tried to create an immersive experience, because people walking into an art gallery aren't necessarily going to be skateboarders. So the idea was to try and give people who don't skateboard the feeling of joining the ride, getting on board with people cruising around the streets.
What was the aspect ratio?
It was fucked, that's what it was. It was really wide. That was the aspect ratio, really, really wide. Like, slither. I can tell you, it was 4,567 pixels by 825. So it's basically 4 times as wide as a high-def screen, roughly speaking. So, a lot of information for the computer to process. Definitely technical challenge if you want to be a nerd about it, like getting the cameras to shoot that kind of resolution was a new thing for me, and editing the whole thing in After Effects was quite a slow process because Final Cut literally doesn't make a frame that size. So yeah, it was a little bit long-winded, but it was worth it, I guess. It was fun.
You were given a brief to create the project around?
This year Etnies is celebrating its 25-year anniversary, and being part of this art exhibition, we were kind of given a loose brief that our artwork was supposed to represent the future 25 years of, or the future of skateboarding in 25 years, rather than celebrating the past as much. And I mean, my angle with it was basically that skateboarding is always going to progress. You're always going to see insane tricks and, you know, stuff that when I was a kid, we couldn't even imagine. So I can't predict the next 25 years in that respect. But the one thing that I could pretty much guarantee was the stuff that you see in Aimless is fun now. It was fun when I was a kid skating 25 years ago, and it will be fun in 25 years. I'm pretty sure of that.
Tell me a little bit about the production crew that you had.
Yeah, Aimless was quite a collective of people helping to make it happen. So the crew consisted of Ricky Biedenbauer, Dustin Aaron, and myself as kind of main cameramen. The skaters, we started off with Kyle Leeper and Ryan Sherman and Aiden Campbell. Ryan and Aiden are homies of mine who work here at Etnies, just some young rippers, helped out getting in the mix. And then as the video progressed, we added more and more people. Jose Rojo came in, Cairo Foster, Tyler Bledsloe, Ben Skopak, and even threw in one of my BMX friends, Nathan Williams. And that was basically the core of the skating crew. And then obviously towards the end, we enlisted help from anybody who wanted to show up, and even a bunch of kids who we didn't even know until the day of filming. They just rolled along and joined the crew and got in the mix, which was great.
Obviously LA is no stranger to production, so what were some of the challenges rolling around with a crew that big?
I knew going into it that we weren't going to have an easy time. I mean, skateboarding in general, filming skateboarding in general is quite difficult. You know, you're always getting kicked out with just a couple of guys. So when you have 3, 4, 5, 6 skaters, 3 cameramen, plus, you know, extra crew helping out, it's kind of a magnet for attention. So, I mean, the theme of it was that the guys were going from A to B sidewalk surfing, literally. Like, if you notice, they really don't skate on private property. It's all about public domain, really, sideboard surfing. So that was part of the theme, but also in my mind as well, it was part of the easy way out of not having to get permits and things like that, you know? I mean, we just try to skate in public spaces that hopefully we weren't going to get kicked out. And we had a few run-ins with the cops, like mainly in my neighborhood. They got a lot of bike cops. They're not even real cops. We call them pizza cops because they look like they're delivering pizzas, but they just, they seem to be on their high horse about getting permits right now. And I actually know a lot about their business and kind of shut them down, basically. When they tried to give us hassle about permits, I gave them hassle about them and their position in the community and how little they were doing for us and how much we pay for them and how they're up for re-election. And I knew how much their boss was getting paid and it's a scandal in the community. And basically they walked away with their tail between their legs and let us keep filming. So that was my way out. But yeah, for the most part, touch wood, we didn't see the real police too much. So.
Information is power.
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, it really got to push the shove where she was calling me out and this and that, and she wanted to call the cops, and I know the main cop in our area, Jack Rich. I'm like, well, call the cops, Jack Rich. I'd love to take this to a higher level. Because my whole thing is, in our neighborhood, there's a lot of photographers and videographers and people like that. You know, we live in the artist district. It's an industrial part of downtown where they're trying to enforce photo and video permits, when it's like, we live here, we've been doing this for many years, and now you guys coming into the neighborhood trying to charge us to do our own business on our own doorsteps. Like, they kind of couldn't say anything to that, so they left us alone.
Tell me about the three rigs that you use.
Okay, yeah. So in order to make up the resolution of this frame that we had to aim for, I kind of went a little bit above and beyond the normal camera rigs. For the full frame shots, in order to get that kind of, it's almost 5,000K resolution width, I had to shoot with red cameras, which was quite a steep learning curve for me because I never touched one of those before. So I literally like rented one a few days before and did some online crash coursing and figured that out. That was fun. The second camera rig was three Canon cameras kind of in a fanned out situation, one forward, two 45 degrees out. I tried lots of different rigs. I actually got this wooden mount where I mounted the cameras in all different directions, but the second camera rig we used was three Canon 5Ds in kind of a fanned out configuration. And then the third camera rig was 360 view with a bunch of GoPros on a little rotating tripod head, so.
You built those initially thinking about the 360 projection?
Yeah, well, this thing, originally the idea was, originally the film was supposed to be viewed in a room where you could project 360 degrees around you, and you can kind of tell that from the second half of the film where everyone's bombing through the streets. That was where I had the multi-cameras where you could see all the way around. But unfortunately the gallery space didn't have the capabilities to do that like we thought, so we opted for the panoramic version. Just kind of basically unfolded the 360 view. And once that was apparent, that was when I realized, okay, now I've got to learn how to use a red camera and figure out the other stuff and incorporate the Canon cameras into it. Because before that, it was just supposed to be this kind of wild ride with a bunch of GoPros, but then it kind of turned into more of a cinematic film, you know? So, two different things, I guess.
What did you edit on? What computer did you have? And what were some of those?
Actually, it's funny you say that because just by chance I happened to get a new tower, Mac tower, right before it kicked in the editing time, which was really lucky because Final Cut doesn't make a frame the resolution that I needed to, so I had to edit the entire thing in After Effects, which if anyone's ever worked in that program, it's awesome, but it's slow and gets really slow when you start building in a deep project like that. So that was, you know, it was different. It was hard to change the flow for that, I guess, the editing.
How long did you film?
We only had the guys in town for a short period of time, and also we rented a bunch of gear, so we pretty much had to cap the filming within a week. And then the editing time, I had a little over 3 weeks to cut it up.
And how long was the final piece? It was around
7 minutes. Yeah.
It seems like just a lot of data to deal with and editing and After Effects. I'm sure you're pulling your hair out.
Yeah, when I first started, I was like, wow, this isn't so bad. You know, new computer really helped. It was super fast. And I'd never dealt with files of that resolution before, you know, like each clip could be several gigs large, you know, no problem, you know. And it's funny because everyone, whenever you try and find out about Red camera stuff, all they ever do is shoot this high resolution and then down-res it to edit. And it's like, I'm the only idiot who didn't want to do that, you know, like everyone I talk to are like, how do you keep it this big? And so that was definitely a challenge and just really slow, and you had to just be very systematic in the organization, like just work on scene by scene and build the film slowly, you know. So yeah, it was definitely a whole different process, but it was fun to take that challenge and try something new, you know, get stuck in the same routine too often.
It seems similar to the film you did with Kyle. How long ago was that?
That was only a few months back. Yeah, I mean, the thing with Aimless, the whole theme of it actually is a bit of an extension of something that I've been kind of doing on my own a little bit with, mostly with Kyle. I did these short films called It's Not Where You Go, It's How You Get There, and it's just basically taking a view of the other side of skating that you don't normally see. People don't normally point a camera at someone cruising down the street and having a good time, and skateboarding is a lot of fun like that, and I like to show stuff that makes people want to go skateboarding. So I don't know, like I definitely feel lucky that I get to film some of the gnarliest skating in the world, you know, like Andrew Reynolds, Heath Kirchhoff, all these people are insane, don't get me wrong, but I kind of like watching those guys just cruising around more, you know. So if you get the opportunity to make things where you see the other side of their skating, I feel like it's, to me it's really interesting. So Aimless was a little bit of an extension of that, you know, there was the rain or shine, it's not where you go, it's how you get there, and I don't know, there's a few other little things that I got in the works that are just, they don't take a long time to film, they don't break anybody, and everyone has a good time, and hopefully people watching it feel like they want to step out their door and go skating after, you know. That's why we make videos, right? I don't know.
That is the whole point. The rain or shine one was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that was high fives to Kyle. Like, we were basically going to do just a kind of a follow-up to the original It's Not Where You Go, It's How You Get There. Real long title that is, isn't it? We were just throwing out ideas, and yeah, it was his idea. He wanted to slop around in the rain. I was like, I wouldn't normally suggest that to anybody, but if he was into it, I was like, I can cover up my cameras and get wet with you. And yeah, that was cool. I mean, he put in the hard part. I just had to film it.
Did you get to see it projected in Paris?
Oh yeah, so that's funny because, you know, the whole time you're editing on this tiny little frame, you know, on the computer, but knowing it's going to be, you know, as large as life, literally, like the skaters were bigger than they were in real life. So I think the projection screen was maybe 21 meters wide, 40 feet or something like that, and it was definitely cool to see it in there. And I knew the space before we went to Paris to check out the art gallery, so I knew what I was getting into. And it was kind of designed so that, depending on where you were in the gallery, you'd see kind of a different film, because it was so overwhelmingly big, you never quite saw the full frame. It looked good in the gallery, but I almost like it better on the computer. I don't know. It's weird, yeah. Maybe I shouldn't say that.
I've noticed that before, though. Like, sometimes when you see a skate video premiere, it's almost hard to watch, because you're so used to being able to take in the whole frame.
Uh-huh.
That when you can't see the whole frame and you have to move your head during...
Yeah,
you know,
and this was really like moving your head, you know, like you're never going to see the whole... Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's funny because I had there's like a balcony view where you see it when you walk into the gallery, and I thought about that more, but then I realized once I got there that if you actually go downstairs, you have a more of a regular cinematic view, like you're in a theater and you could see the whole thing. But yeah, people seem to like it, I guess. The exhibition was really cool, so it's nice to be a part of that, for sure.
How many of the skaters wound up coming over to watch that?
Most of the guys made it out to Paris for the exhibition. Like I said, it was Etnie's 25-year anniversary, so most of the team was there celebrating that and being in the mix. Unfortunately, not all the guys could make it, but, you know, Paris is a long way. But then... Still looks good on a computer, even though it was designed for the big thing, but it looks pretty good on a computer, I guess. So.
Yeah, it looks great. I think it's a unique thing, and to have it's super panoramic, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know what else to call it. Like, that just actually fit better for the length of the rectangle. I was like, panoramic is one, but super panoramic. I don't know.
So. Leaper showed up with a cruiser board. Did he know that he was going to have to ride that board for a week?
Kyle's smart like that. I mean, yeah, he knew the vibe of it was cruising, so I think by bringing a big heavy cruise aboard, he was gonna pretty much bracket himself into only cruising, which was cool. I think he got a little frustrated every once in a while, but he's good at rolling with the punches, Kyle is.
So who are some of the cameos in the film?
Cameos, yeah, we got a couple. Well, Mr. Sneaky, of course, is in there, but only for a blink. Sneaky's the most famous dog in the world, or about to be the most famous dog in the world. Yeah, my dog, Mr. Sneaky, made a sneak appearance, and on the last day when we're all mashing through the streets, there's all kinds of people came out. Jesse Hotchkiss was ripping. He did that backside kickflip on the banks. Don Brown came out with his son Evan and their dog. They were in the mix, bombing hills and stuff. Laban, Chris Lambert. I don't know, a whole bunch of people. You know what's funny, actually? Here's a pretty interesting thing is, originally the ending was supposed to be completely different. Ryan Shekel was supposed to meet up with us and be part of the bigger crew at the end, but that didn't work out. And last minute, I just had to call around anybody I could, and we tried to arrange a scene where everyone was bombing through the streets and mashing down the hill. Unfortunately, I didn't make the call until really late the night before. So when people saw the message saying meet tomorrow at noon, they got it the next morning, and long story short, they thought it was the next day. I was waiting for people and they said, no, I thought you meant tomorrow at noon, and you know. Didn't explain that very well at the time, didn't explain very well now, so it doesn't matter either way. Cut. Shit. Just rambling.
Tell me a little bit about the soundtrack.
Yeah, the soundtrack was quite interesting because we originally were going for another track, trying to license it, and it started getting kind of close to the time and where we should have had it licensed, and it really wasn't working out. So once again, as what happens with a lot of films that I've been doing recently, is, you know, licensing can be too expensive or just not working out. So Sharon Tomlin scored the soundtrack for us, and I worked back and forth with her, which was, in hindsight, better. When I was working towards the track that we wanted originally, it was good, but you know, there's obviously restraints. The track's only going to be as it is, or you can take out a bar or two or re-edit the track a little bit without bastardizing it, but you know, you're stuck with the track. So scoring the track was quite nice, and obviously working closely with Sharon, we went back and forth to kind of fine-tune the edit to the track, and then fine-tune the track to the edit until we kind of like met in the middle towards the end, which was nice.
Have you worked with her before?
Yeah, she did the soundtrack for Rain or Shine as well, and a few other little bits here and there. It's just, usually it's like the same thing happened before. We're trying to clear a track. I usually get inspired by a song to make a video, you know? A song is like where most of my ideas come from, but these days to clear a song can be quite difficult, so, or expensive, or one reason or another, it just doesn't work out for timing. So typically an edit will be inspired originally from a song. You work towards editing with that song, and then quite often when you can't clear that song or license it for legal reasons or whatever, you end up making a song to fit it, like scoring the music. And I don't know, it's kind of a weird arrangement, but what you end up with can be quite original and something different. So it's never quite what you want, but yeah, it's all right.
When I edit it, I'm the same way, and it's always you edit because you get inspired by music and you can feel like where certain things you shoot are.
You can see it, yeah, yeah.
It all sort of comes together that way, so working backwards is a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, it helps having the song originally in mind, so you kind of have this template you're working off of, and then these days I know almost like most songs that I'm going for are going to be a dream, and I know not to get too attached to it, because the ones you get really married to are the ones that are going to just run out on you, and you're like, no, because you know that was the one I loved so much. So yeah, you just try not to get attached to music too much, and yeah, help going back and forth and fine tuning the music to the edit back and forth can work out quite good.
Is there life for this film beyond that exhibition, or is there anything planned for it?
The internet, man. What do you mean? It's gonna live forever online. Yeah, I mean, it was made for the Getty. That was the primary use. And then, you know, obviously in the back of my mind, I knew that it was going to end up online eventually. But it's, you know, you can't really project that kind of a frame in most normal situations. It was very specific to their four projection rig that they had. They had four projectors that made up one image. It was kind of a weird situation. So I'm not sure where I'm going to run into that very often. So I'll probably just live online for now and do its thing there. Just like everything else, just disappear into the abyss. It's just fine. On to the next thing, you know. It's only pushing around the streets, really, isn't it? So.
What are you working on now? Do you have anything else going?
Just working with Etnies on a few little projects. We're introducing new riders to the team, stuff like that. So, you know, skateboarding keeps rolling. It's always something to film and edit, thankfully.
Anything else you want to say about the project?
It was really nice to have the opportunity to do something different, you know? Like, I know when skaters have a hard time breaking the mold, you know? They're very stuck on one thing. For example, when people change from VX1000s to HD cameras, it was like heart-wrenching for some people to separate themselves, you know? And so this was definitely like another leap beyond that. And for all the skaters just to be completely down and be really happy to be involved and do whatever we asked them to do all day and all night throughout the filming. I mean, yeah, I had an amazing group of people to work with and it was a really good experience. So I feel lucky, definitely. Thanks, guys.